And those three are coming into conflict in this issue around the protests of, with Palestine. And really, I mean, I say this as a Jew, when I see the fear now in the Jewish community, a third of Jews are frightened, a third of Jews. Before 2023, it was less than 10%. And so there is a real, there's a fueling of racism and division and populism, which is scary. And the only thing I would say in response to that is that there's a real onus on all political leaders of the mainstream parties, which is a thing we've got to do, is to try and, through our voice, try and sort of bring healing and unity back, and, you know, do it in a way that isn't populist and that fuels sort of social cohesion without, I have to say, what Robert Jednerick said in the Conservative Party, which horrified me.
Right. We'll leave it there, Margaret. And thank you for that. And that's the end of our review of the conference season. I thank James Bethel and Margaret Hodge. That's it for me today. And I'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Next up here on Times Radio, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Andrew, and a very good afternoon to you. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio until 4.
And in the next 2 hours, we will continue the conversation about free speech, and we'll discuss it with the peer and campaigner Claire Fox. Kemi Badenoch has a big giveaway, pledging to scrap stamp duty if the Tories get back in. We'll talk about that. And also the big story on the NHS just after 3 o'clock. Tom Whipple is going to bring us the latest in our Nobel Prize series. It's making us all feel cleverer. And our big interview after 3:30 is with the one and only Joanna Lumley on her new book of treasures.
Let's start with the news at 2, James Kitchen.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. Kemi Badenoch has pledged to axe stamp duty on homes if the Conservatives win power at the next general election. Speaking at the party conference in Manchester, the Tory leader said the policy will benefit people of all ages because conservatism must speak to all generations. She insisted the cut would be funded by £47 billion of savings across welfare, the civil service and the overseas aid budget.
This change will bring wider benefits to our economy too. Because every time a home is sold, it triggers a chain reaction of activity. Movers, builders, decorators, flat pack furniture and DIY. Trips to Next, John Lewis and IKEA. And I can afford to do this while still leaving space within my golden economic rule. Because that's the fiscally prudent way to do things. That's what Conservatives do.
Kemi Badenoch also insisted her party is the only one that can meet the test of our generation. The leader thanked members for standing by the Tories, pledging to back farmers and small businesses and ban doctors from striking. She claimed the party can deliver a stronger economy and stronger borders.
We need bold ideas. We need a positive vision for this country and a plan to deliver it. We need a new approach. A new approach that delivers a stronger economy and stronger borders. We owe that to our children.
Labour's dismissed the Conservative savings plans as fantasy, adding they can't be trusted with the public finances. The former Conservative leader, Sir Ian Duncan Smith, has accused the Prime Minister of not telling the truth over the Chinese spy trial. Sir Keir Starmer's insisted the previous Conservative government policy on China needs to be the focus of scrutiny after the sudden collapse of the trial. It comes after the UK's chief prosecutor suggested the current administration was to blame because it wouldn't label Beijing a national security threat. Sir Ian, who launched the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China, told Times Radio the policy at the time Christopher Berry and Christopher Cash was arrested was clear that China posed a threat.
This ridiculous dance that's been carried out over the last few days, tortuous and deceptive, has been a horrible sight. What they didn't do was prosecute those two people. Why? Because the Chinese government has bullied them like mad and said, you do not prosecute these people, and we want that super embassy, get on with it, otherwise you get no trade relations. And what a pathetic, weak set of people this looks like now.
A man accused of threatening to kill Nigel Farage in a TikTok video has opted not to give evidence in his trial. Prosecutors say the comments made in October last year by Fayez Khan, who's an Afghan migrant, were sinister and menacing. He denies the charges. The jury's been sent out to consider its verdict. And the number of learner drivers with a future test booking has reached a new record high as more slots are being made available to tackle the backlog. Figures from the Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency show more than 668,000 people had a practical driving test booked as of the end of September. That's up 15% on a year earlier. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on the Times radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Hello, we're with you, whether you like it or not, until 4 o'clock. And the WhatsApp number is 0333 003 2353. The Tory conference in Manchester has ended with that speech from Kemi Badenoch. And credit where it's due, it has to be said, the speech went down really well in the hall. And just as a genuinely quite objective bystander, I thought she delivered it really, really well. And there's a slight air with Kemi Badenoch at the moment of come and have a go if you think you're hard enough. If you really do fancy this job, well, see if you can do it any better than me. What did you think, Fee?
I think that she has a different air about her this week, where she does appear to be more relaxed. She appears to be more in control. And that can just prove incredibly powerful in whatever message you are trying to deliver. I think, and this isn't an original observation, other people have made it already, in not rising to the bait about other contenders who might be there in the hall and at the conference, she has definitely retained some dignity.
Yeah, and there were a few laughs along the way as well. Obviously, some of her speech went down better than other parts. I mean, that promise to abolish stamp duty, they absolutely love that in the hall. What do you think? Let us know. 0333 003 2353. And she didn't really mention Nigel Farage very much, but she did use that quote from George Bernard Shaw, never wrestle with a pig. You both get dirty and the pig likes it. Is that the right approach? Tell us what you think. Now, is free speech in peril genuinely in this country? In a moment, we'll get the view of the crossbench peer Claire Fox. I'll have a pint of mild and a bag of scratching, said no member of Gen Z ever. Have our young people simply lost their drinking boots? And do us oldies make them consume alcohol when really it's the last thing they want to do? More on that very important issue before 2:30. It is Nobel Prize week, and today we focus on chemistry and three men who created revolutionary porous materials. One was born in Yorkshire, so we'll take that little bit of British success. And the nation's leading TV critic, Scott Bryan, marks our card ahead of the first episode of Celebrity Traitors, which starts tonight. And for what it's worth, the bookie's favourite is the actor and funny man, Joe Wilkinson. He's 6-1, but I don't know how the bookie's come up with odds for this. I just don't understand it. But anyway, he is the favourite. I've told you, and now you know. Who's our big guest?
Our big guest after 3:30 is Joanna Lumley. Now, she is in to talk about a new book that she's got out just in time for Christmas, kids. It's called My Book of Treasures, and it will be a guaranteed bestseller. It's perfect for nearly every single relative, friend, vicar, stranger on the street. I'm not going to give it to Jane, though. She doesn't appear to want it. It is a collection of lots of little nuggets of wisdom that Joanna Lumley has collected herself.
Go on, let's have a nugget.
Over the years, and also funny things that have caught her eye. She's a big fan of lists. One of the lists that she has in the book is a list of British moths, and I will read that to you later because it's rather glorious. So it's little things that have been said by other people. For instance, Nelson Mandela's quote, resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies.
Ooh, it's
a clever one. Maybe excuse me, I just tapped the microphone there. After 40 years in broadcasting, that can still happen.
Yeah, it wasn't anything worse than that, by the way. Rest assured. Now, the most read stories on the Times website. At number three, woman seen cutting hostage ribbons is married to a Palestinian actor. That story is about an art student who was filmed removing yellow ribbons put up in commemoration of Israeli hostages the day before the October the 7th anniversary. The second most read story is Michelle Moan's London home sold to racing driver for £18 million. Freddie Tomlinson is also the heir to a £525 million fortune. he has bought Moan's Georgian-fronted property after some of her assets were unfrozen by the government.
I absolutely love that slip of the tongue. A property. That's indeed what it was.
Certainly was, wasn't it? I mean, these are eye-watering figures. This lad has a 525 million quid fortune. The house cost 18 million. The lives these people lead.
I must go to him, Jane.
And the most read piece on the Times website is Conservative Party Conference Live. Kemi Badenoch pledges to abolish stamp duty. The Tory leader insisted only her party can deliver both stronger borders and a stronger economy. That was during her speech at the Tory conference. We'll have more on that after 3 o'clock. Your verdict has already come in. What's this listener saying? Jamie, well, she's safe until May. The May elections will be a disaster, so no one will want to take over just to be removed then. OK, keep your thoughts coming. You can read all of those articles I just mentioned on thetimes.com. You will need your digital subscription. Just get one by going to thetimes.com/subscribe.
Serious business to start with, though. Pro-Palestine chants may no longer be heard on our streets as Sir Keir Starmer pledges a further crackdown on protest. The Prime Minister says he is going to review public order powers for the police, going beyond restrictions announced on Sunday. It comes after pro-Palestine demonstrators marked the anniversary of the October the 7th terror attack with protests on university campuses. Well, let's talk now to Claire Fox, crossbench peer and free speech campaigner. A very good afternoon from us. What is your reaction to this suggestion from the Prime Minister of a review of public order powers?
Well, it's so wrong-headed, I don't know where to start. I mean, we were all filled with a certain degree of disgust at the fact that, first of all, those protests happened on October the 7th. In protest, there were kind of celebrations of international intifada. And you can be absolutely horrified that there was so poor taste by the pro-Palestinian activists that they actually held demonstrations after the terrible anti-Semitic attack in Manchester at the synagogue. And yet, the way that we would deal with that can surely not be to allow ourselves to have fewer civil liberties. I mean, it's just an atrocious situation that the only thing that the government comes out with is yet another assault on our right to protest or the right to free speech. I mean, when you hear the slogans on these demonstrations, you might well shudder, and I certainly do. But I think the question is, why have so many young people in particular adopted this stance? And surely what the government should be doing is giving moral leadership in, if you want, launching a battle of ideas for the hearts and souls of the young of this country, so that anti-Semitism isn't quite so casually displayed on our streets, not banning it, which is bad for everyone.
Is it a simple recognition, though, of where society is at the moment, Claire, and where young people go in order to find their intelligence, to find a sense of authority, to find a sense of leadership, and to actually find information? And you can understand how, with such a disconnect in our younger people and perhaps our older people with experience of what anti-Semitism can really mean, that a government might think there's no point us trying to have this grown-up discussion within the context of, you know, current civilised modes. We're actually going to have to tell these kids to stop it.
Well, I mean, you can tell them to stop it, but I'd say that to their face. I mean, you know, for example, if you take the example of Charlie Kirk, the young man who was recently assassinated in America, he was going around campuses. My own colleagues from a completely different political perspective organised Living Freedom, which goes and talks to university students and has it out. And I think that the government have been in a situation. I mean, if you take the Manchester synagogue attack, we now find out that the neighbours of the gentleman who conducted that attack were actually reporting him to the police for fanatical interest in Islam, worried about Islamism, and nothing was done. I mean, this is a failure of the state. And so we constantly see a situation where government ministers speak out on a whole range of things, but they won't take on, for example, Islamism. They won't explicitly go and talk about what's happening and why you should be opposed to such outrages and such ideas. You know, you have to win hearts and minds, you know, and that requires, I mean, I agree with you on this, Vic, I mean, you have to look into the eyes of the 18, 19-year-old full of hate for Jews and explain why that is backward and reactionary. I mean, this is the generation that's been reared on equality, diversity and inclusion, which seems to have left them with a very odd set of priorities about who should be included and who equality is for. And so can't we have a conversation with them? I mean, they can spot racism at the drop of a hat on one side, and explicitly, you mentioned the young woman cutting those yellow ribbons. I mean, she absolutely was full of bile and hate for hostages.
Yes.
In the tunnels of
but Claire Fox, can you not do both things? Can you not have a government that does try and have a civilised and thoughtful conversation with all parts of its electorate, but also does go in tough to try and stop chanting? And this is what we're talking about here today, isn't it? Stop chanting at protests that offends and upsets and deeply, deeply scares other people in the community. You could do both things.
Well, I fear that if we do that, we turn those chanters into free speech martyrs. I think that we sacrifice very important parts of a free democratic society, and we don't actually tackle the real problem. We, in other words, sweep it under the carpet. Now, I am, you know, surrounded by Jewish friends who find these chants both offensive and intimidating. I agree. But I also believe that speech that is offensive should not be banned. I think that is a free speech question. We have to even defend the most obnoxious speech. And I think, you know, you don't bring in a law that just bans these chants, by the way. You basically give the power to the state to ban particular chants that they decide are offensive. Which ones they will be won't be described in the law.
Sure.
And so we end up in a situation where we give ourselves less freedom to have the conversations I'm talking about, because undoubtedly some people will say that some of the speech that I might use when I go to talk to university students with my Academy of Ideas hat on is so offensive and so intimidating that they'd want me banned. And we've already had that.
But Claire Fox, okay, but so that's an interesting thing to bring into the conversation. When you go along to talk to these students, part of the reason why you are there and why they want you there is because you have very much lived this life, haven't you? You have advocated free speech. You have been outspoken in the past. You have advocated for proscribed organisations in the past. So when you came to know that what you had said about the troubles in Northern Ireland had caused offence and upset to people who had lost members of their family and loved ones through the violence of the IRA. Tell us about how that feels, because it's an interesting perspective to have.
So I didn't ever advocate for a proscribed organisation. I did in the context of what was happening in Northern Ireland at the time and the fact that British troops were there, take a position in relation to Irish freedom, and I was part of the Irish freedom movement. And you will remember that very many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, supported the troops out movement in this country. And that was a particular type of war. I actually do not think, by the way, that the advocating for proscribed organisations is what is being discussed here. We're talking about people chanting offensive slogans on demonstrations. And if you go on any demonstration, someone will find it offensive. Now, I have found the rising Israeliophobia, if that's the right term, and which becomes very quickly Jew hatred, incredibly distressing to see and to hear. And I'm simply saying that the way that you deal with that is not to ban the sloganeering, but to tackle why people think it's acceptable to be so explicitly racist without any fear or favour. And what have we got the government's energy going into? Trying to come up with a definition of Islamophobia, of all things, so that we'll have even less free speech. And you asked me to talk about what the government should do, and I'm suggesting that the government are taking a coward's way out here. They are doing what they can to silence debate, and I think what we need is more debate.
Do you think that also more should be done where these protests happen? So more should be done on campus. If the government feels too far away from these students, there are other people in positions of authority much closer to them who I don't think we're hearing very much from.
I know, that's exactly what I'm saying. We need a kind of leadership amongst adults that will actually have these arguments out. And I'm saying that just condemning them isn't enough. I mean, you actually have to go and have a conversation. And I've made the point that many young people are sensitive and don't want to be racist. And we have to explain why Jew hatred is a form of racism, and that the settler colonial state aspect of this argument that's sadly being pushed by academics in many universities is something that needs to be fought over and argued about. And we need to challenge some of the myths that are being perpetrated amongst the young with very little challenge. And if all that the adults in the room do is try and shut everybody up, that doesn't add to any kind of understanding at all. And you talked about my political views of the past. You know, what happens is that in politics is that people argue with you. You think about things. You're encouraged to read books. You aren't simply required to either chant dogma-like these mantras or then be silenced by the state, because that way polarizes things and means that we have given up nihilistically on a generation of young people who we should be trying to influence, not just shut up.
Claire Fox, thank you very much for your time. Claire Fox is a crossbench peer and free speech campaigner. It's almost impossible to tell, because we sit here in this studio, Jane, how many young people we might have listening to Times Radio this afternoon. And if you've listened to what Claire Fox has said there and you would like to tell us about conversations within your generation, and you can always be anonymous for these, I think we need to understand more about what's said, what is challenged, what is left hanging in the air, what is the motivation? Because by the time it gets out into the public domain, by the time it gets on a protest, by the time it's backed up by a placard or a chant or a slogan, it may well be really too late to try and grasp what is lacking in the understanding of the bigger picture.
Well, we do have a representative of the younger generation coming up very soon here on Times Radio, because we're discussing Gen Z and the pressure they feel to go out for drinks with older, raddled colleagues who basically can't leave the booze alone. That's next on Times Radio. This is Jane and Fee with Wickes, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Kate Borsay on Times Radio.
The Prime Minister Keir Starmer is in India at the Global FinTech Festival. Lord Billamoria, the founding chair of the UK-India Business Council, is there too. We'll get an update from him. Kemi Badenoch addresses the party faithful before the Conservative conference winds down in Manchester. We'll have that and the other big UK politics stories of the day with the big brain that is Adam Bolton.
Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio.
With the long, hot summer still fresh in the memory, it's easy to forget what's around the corner. Prepare your BMW for whatever the great British weather can muster with a BMW seasonal inspection. For just £39.99, our expert technicians will top up fluids and oil, check the essentials like tyres, wipers and battery, and return your BMW washed, vacuumed and winter ready. Search BMW seasonal inspection. T's and C's apply.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. There's over £2 million worth of cash prizes to be won, and a chance to get your hands on some epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items. App may be required. May depend on winning moment. See mcdrules.co.uk.
They're bubbly. They're fuzzy. And they're ruddy delicious.
At Oddbox, we rescue farm fresh fruit and veg that's too odd for supermarkets. Then we deliver direct to your door, so every box and every crunch makes a difference to growers and the planet. Use the code RADIO to get 50% off your first box at oddbox.co.uk and help fight food waste, one curvy cucumber at a time. Offer excludes delivery fees. Conditions apply.
Listen at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms, helping create rooms to feel proud of. From design consultants who'll measure your space and bring your vision to life on a 3D plan, through to a professional installation service. Book your free design appointment at wickes.co.uk.
22 and a half minutes past two. I've just had a quick look at the TV screen in the studio, and James Comey is appearing in court today. And I was wondering how many of our previous guests on Off Air with Jane and Fee have gone on to appear in court after appearing on the programme. When he was the former director of the FBI, but he was on the podcast, wasn't he?
He was. He was highly entertaining.
Yeah, he
had one
great.
Of his thrillers out, and he gave us a very good insight into what he believed Donald Trump
would come to later in Donald Trump's life, didn't he? Do you remember what he suggested?
But it was he'd be standing in his dressing gown,
shouting at cars.
Yeah. Anyway, at the moment, President Trump is exacting his revenge. That's what some people would have you believe, obviously, and that's why James Comey is in court today. Right, I'm sure Times Radio will keep you up to date with that as the day progresses. We're talking alcohol and whether it's true that old so-and-sos tend to put pressure in the workplace on their younger colleagues to go out boozing. A new report from the IPPR think tank says many young people feel pressure to drink at work events. Gen Z particularly affected by this pressure. Let's check in with somebody who's under the age of 30. It's Blanca Schofield, who is the Times resident. Is that your job? You're actually employed by the Times to be a representative of Gen Z. You do much more than that.
I am the assistant culture and books editor for the Times and Sunday Times.
Exactly, which is extremely important to note. Okay, so I don't think you drink at the moment, but there's a reason you've stopped drinking because you basically feel it was doing you, I don't know, just making you feel tired and ancient before your time.
To be a bit more accurate and to put a very Gen Z slang on this, I'm actually sober curious.
Okay.
So I do drink a little bit. Like last weekend I had 2 or 3 half pints.
Yes.
But I basically used to really enjoy drinking. Like I started drinking when I was 14. Used to get very smashed with my friends. But in the last year I developed really bad insomnia and I ended up burning out. And often when you read those NHS guidance things online, one of the big things they say is stop drinking. And you're like, I don't want to do that. It's going to make me such a loser. And then you do it and you realise it actually makes a big difference.
But it sounds to me like you've made a very rational and sensible decision about your drinking. And I imagine that anyone who puts pressure on anyone else to drink is probably doing it for their own sake because they selfishly don't want to drink on their own. Have you come across that?
And I've been talking about it a lot with older generations as well, because I find the difference really interesting. And like people I know in their 40s and 50s who like are, you know, who start to drink less because it impacts them more as they get older, they say that their friends don't want to go to the pub with them anymore, or their friends think they're boring. And I think something that's really refreshing about my generation is that no one would ever say that to me. Like when I stopped drinking as much as I did, my friends were really supportive.
And are you still able to navigate your social world in a satisfactory way?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I definitely don't go on massive nights out anymore. You know, like, 2 weekends ago, one of my friends went to one of those club nights that end at 6 a.m. and I politely excused myself from that because I knew that that probably wouldn't be as fun. But, like, I guess I'm kind of like, I've already experienced that. But then I do think, like, talking to people who are younger than me, like younger Gen Zs, I do think it's a shame to completely miss out on that. Like, I think I'm not drinking now, but I have had the experience of drinking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, like, if I had kids, I would say to them, like, it's good for you to experiment and, like, test your boundaries and go on big nights out and, like, you know, see what you're comfortable with. And I think that people who are younger than me these days are almost too careful sometimes because they're worried that there's going to be big repercussions on social media or that it's going to really impact their social life or they're going to do something that they regret, which inevitably will happen sometimes. But I think you also learn a lot from that.
I think it's such a key point because also presumably that makes you look at older generations who are still crashing around in bars and with regards to, you know, drink in the workplace, still going out and drinking with people who you don't have the ultimate confidence in. They shouldn't have the ultimate confidence in you. You know, we're mixing two worlds. And I think we don't have that ability in our generation to worry enough about how we look and how we used to look when we drank a lot. But you do.
Yeah, I mean, it's the balance. It's almost like older generations should probably drink less and be a bit more self-aware. And younger generations shouldn't necessarily drink more, but should feel, you know, comfortable with the idea of drinking more and be less self-aware.
Yeah, we should definitely be more self-aware, Jane.
Christine says, on the subject of alcohol, in Aberdeen, we're delighted to soon welcome the opening of an alcohol-free bar. It's called Sober, S-O-B-R.
Bar. And it's the brainchild of a lovely woman called Kate Kenyon. Well, Christine, thank you for alerting us to that. There's also an alcohol-free bar in on Drury Lane in London. It's called Club Soda, and it just serves alcohol-free products. And alcohol-free products have got loads better, which must be helping you, Blanca. I mean, when you go out and you're not having a half, what might you have from the alcohol-free world?
I don't really have any of those. I would just have a lime and soda, because also the benefit of doing that is that people think you're drinking a G&T or a vodka soda lime.
Yeah, and does it matter what other people think you are drinking?
Like, not so much. Like, I'm lucky, again, because I'm a confident person and I have friends who are supportive about it. But, like, there is still an element, a slight element of embarrassment. So it shouldn't matter at all, but it does matter a little bit to me.
Yeah, you see, I think that's interesting because I don't drink very much. Fee doesn't drink very much. We both enjoy a night out up to a point, don't we? But the truth
it's
is...
quite an early point.
Yes. The point at which we leave is usually at about 7:30. But the truth is, Blanca, and you will be able to relate to this based on what you told us about your recent experience, a night out, when you're sort of 3 or 4 drinks deep with some great mates, at the time, it's brilliant. It's still brilliant, even for me. It's just the next morning.
Oh, yeah, it's so fun. And, like, that's what I'm saying, that it's so difficult because I don't want to be like, teenagers, like, get drunk, because obviously that can have awful repercussions. But, like, there is, you know, it is such a specific experience of growing up, like, doing pre-drinks at your friends and, like, getting a bit tipsy. So, like, yeah, it's a great thing to have experience, and I feel grateful to have had those times with my friends. But then also, I do think the British and Irish people get too drunk when they get drunk. Like, I was, sorry to go on, but
no,
I was recently in Sweden reviewing a music festival for work, and there were, like, no drunk people at the festival, like, at all. I'm not exaggerating, except then on the last night when I was in the crowd for the Chapel Roan headline, there was a smash person in the crowd, and he was British.
Right. But that's, you know, it's not, that's just a fluke. Blanca, lovely to have you on the programme. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And the listeners are loving sober curious. But in fairness, when my children abandoned veganism and returned to fish, they were fish curious for quite a few months.
There's nothing wrong with curiosity.
No, we went through it. I went with it.
But it's interesting, isn't it, Jane, because you and I have both come through newsrooms and radio stations in earlier decades where drinking was the thing. And actually, as a much younger woman, I think I would have found it incredibly difficult to negotiate those workplaces if I wasn't happy to go to the pub and drink.
I think that's a really good point. And frankly, it used to be the case, and it was largely men. They would go to the pub, very close to the house that is Forever Broadcasting, at about 11:30, and they'd still be there, and I'm talking in the morning, and they'd still be there 7, 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
and that was 5 days a week.
Well, it was. Some of the programmes they were overseeing weren't actually operated out of the pub. They were edited
in the pub. Right, OK, I think those days are very definitely gone. Next on Times Radio, we'll be discussing the winners of the Nobel Prize for Chemistry, plus how extreme weather is devastating British wheat farming. Now, this is very important, so we'll talk about that a little later. Stay tuned. Times Radio, just after 2:30, the headlines, James Kitchen.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. The Conservative leaders branded stamp duty a bad tax, announcing her party would axe the levy if it returns to power.
Scrapping stamp duty will benefit people of all ages. No longer will they be punished with a tax that is a barrier to doing the right thing for them, for their family and for society.
Pemmie Badenoch also told her party conference in Manchester she'd ban doctors from striking and back farmers and small businesses. Labour says the promises are based on fantasy savings. Sir Keir Starmer says the government is disappointed the China spy trial in the UK was dropped. He's blaming the previous Tory administration, although the Director of Public Prosecutions says the PM's own ministers refused to brand Beijing a threat to national security. Hamas says it's exchanged lists of hostages and prisoners with Israel. The two sides are continuing indirect talks in Egypt, trying to reach a peace deal brokered by the US President Donald Trump. The mother of Madeleine McCanns told the court she felt distressed and invaded when two women approached her on her driveway. They deny stalking Kate McCann, with one accused of posing as her missing daughter. Sir Keir Starmer says three Bollywood films will be made in Britain from next year, creating 3,000 jobs. He's been visiting the production company Yash Raj Film, based in Mumbai. And the number of learner drivers with a future test booking has reached a new record high. New figures suggest 668,000 people are waiting, up 15% on last year. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Life's like a photo album. Mine bring back so many memories. That's a street party on VE Day. Me, 3 years old. Well, here's me, 17, teddy boy. Our wedding. Didn't my Shirley look lovely? Holiday in Devon when the boys were small. They tower over me now. Oh, now these are the more recent ones on my phone. Oh, that's me and Kate enjoying a game of cards. She's my care professional from home instead. Kind, funny and very good at gin rummy. Since Shirley passed away, Kate comes to the house most days to help with the things I can't manage so well now. She's great company. I mean, the boys visit me most weekends, but they can't be here all the time, so home instead have really helped. I have the best quality care, but in my own home, from Kate. She's wonderful. Though she will have to let me win at cards now and again.
For award-winning home care you can trust, go to homeinstead.co.uk.
Wow, Direct Line sorted my claim with a 5-year guarantee on the car repairs. That's how it's done. Imagine if that's how everything got done. Like getting my kids to eat their greens.
Mummy, the vegetable van is here. Please can I have a broccoli pop? Or a courgette? Please?
Go on then.
Direct Line, that's how it's done.
Valid whilst the car is yours. Must use approved repairers. Excludes poor maintenance, later damage, wear and tear.
Get the day's politics, business and sport every weekday in Breakfast from 6:30 a.m.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms. Ready to start your next home project? This autumn at Wickes, there are great kitchen and bathroom offers available. Explore the ranges at wickes.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wickes store.
I just want to return to one of our earlier topics. We were talking about free speech being curtailed with Claire Fox. And Nick sent a message in saying, if there was an anti-gay protest with people chanting death to gay people in Soho every week in and out with violence, etc., I'd want them moved or banned or both. And a very similar feeling from Hayley, who sent us a message actually with an attachment. And I'm afraid I can't open that at the moment, but I get the gist of it. Hayley says, if my husband was black and somebody was screaming racist chants in their face, then they would be arrested.
And this from Philip. I've recently attended two weddings of friends' children. The bride and grooms at both weddings were in their 20s, as were most of their friends. Based on the sample of these two weddings, the demise of drinking amongst the young has been hugely exaggerated. I was simply stunned by the huge amount of alcohol consumed and the shots being downed at 2 a.m. Compared with my own wedding in the mid-80s and those of my contemporaries, there was not this level of drinking. I drove away from my wedding with my bride, completely sober, says Philip. There you go. That's how things were done in the Beat the Philip household. And Millie mentioned your surname there. Wouldn't do that necessarily. Back in the 80s. Mm.
And there's one from, I think your name's probably Bob, the good little Catholic girls at home by nine for Horlicks and knitting. Well, I'm Scottish Presbyterian, so count me out of that.
I'm Catholic curious through birth.
Do you know what? I'm not.
Scouseland.
I am not Horlicks curious. I just think that sounds disgusting.
Do you know what? We do get abused, don't we? Centrist grannies, we're not over that, because that's why I mention it every day. And now we're Catholics who go to bed with all Horlicks. It's just nonsense. I stay up. Last night I was still awake at 9:35. Right, John Pienaar has news of his show between 4 and 7.
So, I mean, we're looking, of course, at the speech by Kemi Badenoch. I'm going to be talking to Mel Stride, the Shadow Chancellor, a bit later on in Pienaar and Friends after 6 o'clock. And I'm going to be just weighing it up in different ways. It certainly, you could say, gave the Tory party some definition, more than they had before. Now the question is, is it credible? Is it credible stuff that we heard? And they've got a flood of policy there. And will she be around long enough to see whether it works or not? Because that's obviously a big thing in the background. You've seen the Times today, where you've got shadow ministers you know, all over the place, speculating about whether she will last or whether she should last. So we've got that. And also the Middle East talks are going on. There's still that optimism in the air that it might just lead to something. And I'm going to be talking to the Palestinian Palestinian ambassador about whether he agrees with that. And some experts who've got a very good close-up view of what is going on there and behind the scenes. I also sort of think that if that ends in peace, a peace deal at least, it's not, you know, 3,000 years of and peace for all time, as Donald Trump suggests, for me, then give him a Nobel Peace Prize. You know, I mean, he's the guy who put so much weight into this push for peace, partly because he wants a Nobel Peace Prize. It doesn't negate the case for him getting one. And that would be the least important development. What would be important is the end of the war in Gaza.
That is hugely important, but I can't take away some of the other things in that man's life and then see a clear path to congratulating him on a Nobel Peace Prize.
It sort of partly depends on what you think the Nobel Prize is for. This is also a guy who's turned the Defense Department in America into the Department of War. He's said that what the purpose of the military is to annihilate America's enemies. Now, you could say that is actually what the military pretty much anywhere is for. And his love of peace does not seem to extend to doing, you know, as much as he can to bring peace to Ukraine and defeat Russia there. But in its own space, peace in the Middle East, after the horrors that we have seen for 2 years, that could be worth something. And an achievement there. And Obama was given a peace prize in anticipation of him doing things. And the committee that gave these things out were rather disappointed that he didn't do all of those things.
John, we'll be listening between 4 o'clock and 7 on Times Radio.
We're going to carry on talking about the Nobel Prizes as we have been doing all week. The prize in chemistry has been awarded to a trio of scientists for their work in developing metal organic frameworks. The new materials can be used to capture carbon dioxide, store toxic gases and harvest water from desert air. Here's one of the winners picking up the phone to the Nobel Committee this morning.
Okay, so
hello.
How long I have to stay here? How long? Because I have to go out for the meeting. Okay. So
I have
how
one
long?
Last question.
5 minutes. Sure.
Okay, this is just...
You've got things to do!
This has been such a brilliant insight, Tom, into the workings of the Nobel Prize Committee. Tom Whipple is our science writer and special correspondent, and you've been bringing us these details all week. Shall we just talk about the stuff that's involved in these prize winners' minds? Because I think we might be able to understand this a little bit more than we understood quantum tunnelling yesterday. Here's hoping, anyway.
This is possibly better than quantum tunnelling. And the chemists are pleased that it's one for actual chemistry. They've been moaning for a while that loads of these have gone for things that are basically biology. This is about people who have made these lattice-shaped materials. So if you think about how a diamond forms a lattice, well, one of the great insights was Richard Robson, one of the trio awarded, realised he could make a similar lattice but using copper ions and these other organic molecules you don't particularly need to know the names of. And they were bigger, and you can make these lattices essentially to the shape you need. And then when that happens, the structure of the lattice ends up making chemistry itself, in a sense. You can make ones that can trap gases. So if you don't want your fruit to go off, it can trap the sort of ethylene gases that make them go off, or you can trap carbon dioxide. It gets adsorbed, sort of sticks to the inside of these structures. And one of the people announcing the prize described it as a bit like Hermione's handbag in Harry Potter. You make these massive spaces in these tiny, tiny spaces. They can have the surface area of a football field, but you can sort of hold it in your hands, and then it can absorb all of the gas that you want and do all of these sort of interesting things.
So is this something that could really revolutionise our ability to deal with climate change, for example?
Well, the hope is so. I mean, I'll put it this way. If we do make things that effectively pull carbon dioxide from the air and then manage to sequester it, is going to involve structures quite likely like these. And people have now made tens of thousands of them. This insight that you can sort of make these lattices to order and they can have the rooms, the sort of chemical rooms that you require to house whatever chemical you're looking for.
So these three people, Susumu Kitagawa, Richard Robson and Omar Yahi, they worked on this together or they've worked on this separately?
Richard Robson worked first and he produced the first metal organic framework, the first MOF. It wasn't very good, it fell apart, it had to be in water. And then the other two separately, and them working separately to each other and to him, found ways to stabilise these and make more usable ones. And in fact, the very busy scientist you were hearing on that call is Susumi Kitagawa, who had other things to do that evening than talk to Sweden.
It's just such a fantastic mechanism of letting somebody know about a life-changing award.
It's absolutely brilliant. And actually, I'd like, if we've got time, to talk about something that is Nobel Prize related but slightly different, because yesterday John Gurdon died, who was a British Nobel laureate from... He won it in 2012, and he had one of the most memorable acceptances that I recall in my career. In 2012, he rushed to... They had this hastily convened press conference in London. He'd come down from Cambridge, and he rushed to it. And he brought with him a school report he had from when he was 15, where the schoolmaster had written, "I believe he has ideas about becoming a scientist. This is quite ridiculous. It would be a sheer waste of time, both on his part and those who have to teach him." And he had kept this all those years.
Wow.
And it was there to shove in the face of Mr. Gaddam, his biology teacher.
Mr. Gaddam, couldn't stand him either. Tom, this has just been lovely. Thank you very much indeed for illuminating us into the world of the Nobel Prize.
Now, tomorrow, the Nobel Prize for Literature is going to be awarded, and we will definitely be covering it here on this programme. Tom, you're excused from that one, because I appreciate that's not your specialism.
That's not me. That's not me. I don't read.
No, but you do know a lot of other stuff, so give yourself credit. Tom Whipple, lovely to have you on. Thank you very much indeed. Actually, this is about climate change and about the impact of severe weather. A new report from the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit think tank suggests extreme weather has had a real impact on the production of British wheat. Now, the research estimates that in the 2020s so far, we have had a wheat deficit in this country of some 7 million tonnes, enough to bake 4 billion loaves of bread. Jamie Burrows is chair of the NFU's National Combinable Crops Board. Jamie, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
First of all, just tell us where you farm exactly.
I farm in Hertfordshire in Norfolk, so two parts of East Anglia.
OK, and is that where most of Britain's wheat is grown?
A large proportion of it is, yeah. And that's something we've seen this year, is that particularly the east side of the country has been significantly drier than the rest, and that's where most of the wheat is grown. So definitely weather has had an impact.
Right, OK. Now, I'm assuming that most of our wheat is grown there or has been grown there for a reason. So it's partly the weather, partly the soil type as well?
Yeah, a lot of it has been historically, the weather has been good on our side of the country. It's been dry, but not too dry. And obviously, the weather patterns have changed in recent years.
OK, so what's happened in recent years then? Which has been the worst year for wheat production?
I think what we've seen, particularly in the last 12 months, is dry springs. The last two springs have been pretty dry. We've had wet autumns, so when we've tried to establish a crop, the ground's been too wet. Crops have gone into really poor conditions. There's a saying in farming, well sown, half grown, and the crops just have gone into really poor conditions, and some of them have actually rotted. Farmers replacing seed two, sometimes three times, trying to get a crop in the ground. And then come the spring, it doesn't rain at all. So as the plants are getting bigger and we put the fertiliser on, they're just not getting that intake of water to help them grow.
So what about this harvest, the one that presumably has now come in or is being collected? What stage are you at?
It's been really variable across the country. Cereal harvest, even up in Scotland, has probably been done for 3 or 4 weeks now. And I would say it's better than the last 2 years, but still really variable across the country. And yields, I think, will probably be down about 20%.
And for you personally, what's it been like?
I grow quite a lot of malting barley. Norfolk's good for that, and all historically has been. Because it didn't rain, plants didn't really grow. They didn't till her out very well. So we didn't make specification for our malting barley, which meant the price we sold it for dropped by £50 a tonne, which on a 1,000 tonne of barley is quite a lot of money.
Will you survive?
We will. We've got a sheep enterprise on our farm, and we've diversified into, we've got a horsey business as well. So we've looked at other options, and we've tried to mitigate as much risk as we can. There are various, or there have been up until the summer, there have, we've had different schemes, environmental schemes available to us as farmers through DEFRA. They've now stopped, unfortunately, but so we there is a payment that we can take for growing a cover crop, which helps us improve the soil quality over the winter, and we graze our sheep on them. And then there's also we get a payment for growing a spring crop as well, and there's some limitations to what we can do to it. So we've actually seen a sort of shift in an encouragement from government to go down environmental routes, and that has actually had an impact on the amount of wheat that's drilled in the UK. It's not just down to the environment of the last 2 or 3 years. So that needs to be taken into consideration as well. The cost of our production is so high compared to, you know, some of our competitors elsewhere in the world, and we are a global commodity at the end of the day, that it has meant that it's actually more cost effective for farmers to put large areas down to you know, environmental schemes.
Well, who are your global competitors?
Well, for bread making, we actually need some Canadian wheat. The grist involved in the bread making process means that we need a harder grain, which Canada brings in every year. We will also see wheat coming in from Germany and France as well, so more local to us.
But why are they able to produce wheat if we can't?
So that, again, some of that will be down to they might have had a better weather than us. France have had two really dry years, and this year they've had a much better one. But they also, the standards that we produce our grain to are slightly higher, and some of the hoops that we have to jump through in order to produce it are a little more stringent. So it does make our cost production slightly higher.
Thank you very much indeed for telling us about it. That was Jamie Burrows, Chair of the National Farmers Union National Combinable Crops Board.
Wow. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about all the TV that's fit to watch with the very excellent Scott Bryan. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive with Barclays Corporate Banking. This afternoon from 4, join John Pienaar for well-informed debate, insight and analysis that brings the big political picture sharply into focus. From global events on the international stage to issues closer to home. John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive with Barclays Corporate Banking. See tomorrow clearly with Big Picture Banking from Barclays. Find out more at barclayscorporate.com/thetimes.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
Growing a business takes a powerful team. People who think big, raise the bar and smash expectations. People who are feeling at their best, not worried and waiting for healthcare. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, you need a team that's ready to deliver. Bupa helps your people to get health worries seen and sorted with fast access to expert advice, including GPs and physios. Your team will have fast help for muscle, bone and joint problems, plus mental health services and cancer cover as standard, so they're ready for whatever life throws at them, at home and at work. Take your business further by building a happier, healthier and more motivated team. And as prevention is better than cure, your team will have access to our digital wellbeing services, including 1,500 gym classes, mindfulness programs and expert content. That's better for your team and better for your business. Get ready to power your growth with small business health insurance that powers your people. Let's get growing. Search Bupa Small Business.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover
on Times Radio.
Celebrity Traitors kicks off tonight.
Maybe I have got a dark side.
I'm here to win.
I don't know what beasts lie within me.
I'm going to fight till the death.
Oh, my God!
Players, welcome to the Highlands.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, the castle!
There it is.
Now, I know out in the real world you're very important and successful, but here there is no special treatment.
I love it when Claudia gets tough. And I think that was a little Tom Daly in there, wasn't it? Saying, I'm going to fight to the death. Yeah, don't do it.
It's not all that convincing.
Scott Bryan is our resident TV critic and joins us now. It's a star-studded lineup, isn't it? Claire Balding, Stephen Fry, Tom Daly, Paloma Faith, Charlotte Church. The list goes on. Have you seen it?
I have seen it. I am very cautious in regards to what I can and cannot say in case I am murdered. But I would say, I mean, firstly, the cast, I don't think in my time when I've been reviewing, watching TV, I've ever seen a cast like this. I mean, it's, I would say probably the most stellar TV casting, reality show-wise, celebrity-wise, I've ever seen. And I think that's, you know, partially down to just the fact that this show, the main civilian version, has been a rip-roaring success. But I think it also shows kind of how just popular it is in terms of something that's cool and that people actively really want to be a part of. And I think what I can say, having seen the first episode, is that you can tell that the celebrities actually really want to be there. I think on some TV show formats, you sort of sense the confusion by the celebrity when they turn up. Maybe you can, off camera, sort of they're sending an email to their agent asking what the show actually is that they've agreed to be a part of. Whilst on this version, the Celebrity Traitors, they are actively from the off talking about tactics. They are sort of talking to other fellow celebrities, trying to work out whether they should join an alliance or whether they should treat them as friends or foe. And I think that provides a different dynamic compared to the civilian series. Of course, you can't have people sort of going under the radar as much in a format like this.
And Scott, what we really want to see as viewers from the celebrities is the mask slipping. Do you think that we're going to see that? We're going to see horrendous moments of tears and tantrums from some of these people?
I mean, that is a big question. I mean, I think normally in the opener, the series opener, you know, we don't see so much of that. And that's something that really comes along in the later episodes. I think because the tension is ramped up to the extent, I think also the unpredictability, because of course, if you're a strong player, you could also be ending up being removed from the game, you know, either banished or murdered. So I think time will tell on that one. I think anything else I say, if I'm honest, I fear of revealing a spoiler.
Yeah, let's not, because...
But all I can say is that you won't be disappointed tonight, because
excellent.
I think that they've managed to retain it. And it's not that they haven't changed the format, they haven't lightened it, it's the same traitors, and Claudia is treating them exactly the same as well. She's not being more friendly because... You know, some of our mates are there. She is treating it as like you would want Claudia to be treating them.
Well, I'm just looking forward to seeing her wardrobe. I like those feather frilled capes. It's not a euphemism. Let's talk about two other shows, if we can, in the time we've got left. Netflix's eerie thriller Wayward, which stars Toni Collette. But Scott, I didn't realise it was written by the comedian Mae Martin. But it's not funny, is it?
It isn't funny at all. I mean, I would say it's quite similar to a show that Netflix cancelled about 5 years ago. It's funny how things kind of sort of come round again. A show that back then was very sort of heavily praised called The OA. I mean, The OA was a little bit more surreal than this is. That was a show that was all about these people who were essentially kind of locked away and they tried to escape. This series, starring and created by Mae Martin, is about a group of teenagers who are rebelling so much they get taken away to this sort of therapy place. But the therapy's a little bit weird. Toni Collette plays this sort of scary head teacher. And you try to work out, along with Mae Martin, who plays the police detective, you try to work out, you know, what the actual therapy is. Is it actually more harmful than good? And I think What it does well, I think, is firstly, the plot is quite pacey, so it doesn't sit back too much. There's 8 episodes, but the time flies by quite quickly. And I also think it taps into cults. I think it taps into the feeling that is quite agonizing of like not getting on with your parents or your guardians so much that they decide to send you away, in that sort of rebellious and sort of nature, but also the fear. And I think it is... sort of quite distinctive on TV as a new TV show right now. I think it draws a lot of parallels to other shows. I think some other shows do it better, but I mean, it's quite an achievement by Mae Martin to have something that you're writing, starring, and, you know, is created by you. And I think it feels, you know, rather distinctive at the moment. So that's why I'm recommending it this week.
Excellent. Good recommendation. I'd watch anything that Toni Collette's in as well. And finally, Scott, you want to tell us about a BBC documentary as part of the Storyville strand called The Contestant. So I've read about this, but I can't quite believe it is what I've been told it is. Can you?
I mean, I had heard of it too, but what this documentary does is it shows you what actually happened. And it was a reality show that existed in Japan before Big Brother even debuted, you know, all the way back in the early noughties, where they got a guy, they put him into a room, gave him a camera, and the room had no furniture and no food. And they just said that the only way he would be able to sort of be comfortable, have furniture and also eat, is by winning competitions at the back of magazines. So you sort of see him scrawling away. He's also, by the way, completely naked. He's had all of his clothes taken off him too. He ends up being in that room for something like 15 months. And unbeknownst to him, even though he's been given a video diary, he sort of knows that what he's been doing will be made for something. And of course, he's part of a competition. He doesn't know, because his communication's been cut, that he's been watched by 19 million viewers in Japan every single week. He also writes a diary, and the diary, without his permission or knowledge, is published and sells more than 800,000 copies throughout the country. And there is this surreal ending point where he's in a room, he gets taken to another room, the walls collapse, and it's a whole studio full of, you know, cheering fans. And that's how it's been revealed to him, that he is in a TV show the entire time. And his facial expression, as you can imagine, is of confusion and bewilderment. I think it's one of the most, I mean, it's a show that you can never do now, but it's they speak to the person who was, you know, at the heart of this. They speak to the person who came up with it. And I think it really makes you question about what line is exploitation, what line is entertainment. And I think it's just a sort of story from our past, which doesn't feel real even now.
And very briefly, we've only got 20 seconds or so. I mean, is the guy all right now?
He does talk about the mental health consequences that it causes. Not all of them are good. I think the documentary, you expect it to maybe tap into it more, kind of maybe the after effects. But I mean, as a story itself, you won't forget it.
Sure. It sounds absolutely awful. In the most true sense of the word. So that is Storyville on the BBC. We also talked about Wayward on Netflix, and Celebrity Traitors kicks off tonight. It starts at 9 o'clock on BBC One. Scott, thank you very much.
On the free Times Radio app and via your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
It is Times Radio. Good afternoon. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. We're here until 4 o'clock. And in the next hour, we'll have a look back at the Tory leader Kemi Badenoch's speech to the conference. It was punchy. She delivered it well. But ultimately, will it matter? We'll talk about that. And our tech expert, Chris Stokel-Walker, on the racist comedy sketches getting a new and rather horrific life on social media. And our big guest is only Joanna Lumley. Don't go anywhere. Here's the news. James Kitchen.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. Kemi Badenoch has announced a future Conservative government would abolish stamp duty, branding it a bad tax that's killing social mobility. She also promised to ban doctors from striking, tighten rules on motability cars, and use half of all savings from cuts to reduce the deficit. She told her party conference in Manchester a Tory government would back farmers, small businesses and victims of crime. The Shadow Environment Secretary, Victoria Atkins, was asked if it will be enough to blunt reform success.
I think they'll be worried about us after this. My goodness me, you know, who doesn't hate stamp duty? Suddenly we've opened up the future of home ownership to young people. We've opened it up to families who want to grow their families. We've opened up to grandparents.
Labour's called the speech a desperate mix of gimmicks. Meanwhile, the Times understands that Kemi Badenoch's shadow cabinet is divided over her future. Some shadow ministers are so concerned they're considering the nuclear option of resigning to precipitate a leadership contest. The leader's team is aware of a WhatsApp group containing 14 Tory MPs who want to oust her. But the former Conservative leader, Sir Ian Duncan-Smith, told Times Radio removing yet another leader would not be in the party's interests.
You have to put the things wrong inside us first before we can get the right to be heard. And keeping hold of Kemi, because she's, I think, got the right stuff, as we would have not seen in Mrs. Thatcher in 75, 76. It was only later that this began to appear that this woman really had something. Well, all of that is what you have to do and give people a chance to develop. And I think Kemi showed today that she's taken those first important steps to showing that she has character, guts and intellect.
Sir Keir Starmer's insisted the previous Conservative government policy on China needs to be the focus of scrutiny after the collapse of a spying trial. It comes after the UK's top prosecutor suggested the current administration was to blame because it wouldn't label Beijing a national security threat. The Prime Minister disagrees.
Whatever their position was the only position that could be presented at trial. Now, that's not a political to and fro, that's a matter of law. You have to prosecute people on the basis of the circumstances at the time of the alleged offence.
It's emerged the Manchester synagogue terrorist told police he had killed two Jews in the name of the Islamic State. Jihad al-Shami phoned 999 and told an operator he was responsible for the attack on the Heaton Park synagogue last Thursday. Shami made the call shortly after driving his car into worshippers at the gates and then stabbing at least two people. His admission of an ideological motive led to the urgent designation of the attack as terrorism. He was shot dead by police shortly afterwards. And nearly 4,000 people are challenging river pollution in the biggest ever environmental legal action filed at the High Court. The claims accusing poultry producers and a water company of long-term ecological damage to the Wye, Lug and Usk. Hereford resident Jenny May-Wile noticed pollution 5 years ago in the water she used to swim in.
It was like being immersed in this amazing kind of vibrant ecosystem that everything was alive. So many insects, plants, animals, fish. And now it's like a sludgy desert. There's algae blooms that mean that no oxygen is getting in. It's heartbreaking to see it.
Avara Foods Limited, Freeman's of Newent Limited and Welsh Water all deny the claims against them. And for a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on the Times radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Good afternoon. We're here until 4 o'clock. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. We love to hear from you on 0333 003 2353. Our big guest this afternoon, only Joanna Lumley. Now, Fee's done that interview and I'm guessing, Fee, that it's wide-ranging.
It is wide-ranging. And, yeah, we talk about lots of things, but it's hard not to with Joanna Lumley because she takes you to different places that you weren't expecting.
Well, she's always travelling abroad and making
tea. She
is. Did she take you anywhere?
No, she didn't take me into one of the tombs of Luxor. I saw her do that once and she just looked so hot. I thought maybe part of her had melted and would never come back. We talk about lots of things. Her early career, her attitude towards the dawn, maybe some thoughts about Chris Evans as well. It's all there.
Okay, gosh, I can't wait. Joanna Lumley on Times Radio after 3:30 this afternoon. Chris Stokel-Walker is our tech expert. He's here with us every single Wednesday. And today he's focusing on why AI poses a particular threat to YouTubers. We'll discuss that. Mr. Beast, very much in the line of fire there. We'll talk about that in about 10 minutes' time. First of all, then, a bit of politics. Kemi Badenoch has said she'll abolish stamp duty on the sale of homes in her final speech to the Tory conference.
Conference, stamp duty is a bad tax. It is an unconservative tax. The last Conservative government cut stamp duty for thousands of home buyers. But now we must go further. We must free up our housing market. Because a society where no one can afford to buy or move is a society where social mobility is dead. So I have looked at the stamp duty thresholds to see where we can change them. I have looked at the rates you have to pay to see if we can lower them. I have decided that we can't, because that simply wouldn't be enough. Conference, the next Conservative government will abolish stamp duty on your home.
They loved it. I just realised that my introduction made it sound as though she would never speak to the Tory conference again. And of course, she may not. But on the other hand, the general consensus is this was a good speech and she delivered it well. The Tory leader also said her party would cut £47 billion worth of government spending. She's promising that her plans to roll back several taxes brought in by Labour are fully costed.
Over the next decade, Rachel Reeves is going to double the deficit with her borrowing and tax doom loop. She is stealing from our children and grandchildren, and Conservatives will put an end to it. We will always explain upfront where we will make these savings. We're not going to do what Labour did, promise not to cut public spending, only to snatch away pensioners' winter fuel payments. We are doing things differently. Thanks to the hard work of the Shadow Cabinet, we have already identified £47 billion in savings. Priti has earmarked £7 billion from the overseas aid budget. Alex has identified £8 billion from cutting the civil service. And Helen has found £23 billion from welfare.
They like that too. Well, political commentator and Times Radio presenter Adam Bolton is with us now. You have been in Manchester, haven't you?
I was in Manchester, yes.
And how was it for you, Adam?
Well, as everyone said, it was a much smaller conference than it has been previously, and there was less legging, less corporate sponsorship of what was going on. Although it did strike me that, you know, both the other leaders of the main parties have said that they think the Conservative Party is dead. I don't think the Conservative Party is dead. I mean, it may be sort of in intensive care, but it's not dead yet. And what interests me, there are a lot of young people there who you might have thought would have been tempted by Reform UK, but were still sticking with the Conservatives, which I thought was a sign of optimism for them. I mean, they were slightly sort of, you know, weird young men in suits, but nonetheless, they were there.
Well, I mean,
that's British politics for you.
I would argue, frankly, if you attend any party conference, I mean, I'm excusing you here, Adam, you're not representative of the general population, are you, anyway? You're just not.
No, you're absolutely not representative. I mean, I would accept that's why I do it, right? Because you want someone to go and look at the party conferences and tell most normal people who are not there. I mean, even within the leader's speech, the number of people who will actually look at the leader's speech in full as it happens and compare them with the other leader's speeches, I suspect you're talking about a very small group indeed. I mean, on that basis, I think probably one would have to say, just in straightforward leader's speech, that, you know, Kemi Badenoch probably won today. It was a very, very well-delivered speech, which actually had some content.
She did it well. She looked confident. There was a bit of laughter. I actually just thought, as a presenter, she came across brilliantly well today.
Yeah, I think she presented very well. She'd clearly gone over it again and again. She was using an autocue, but most of it seemed to become naturally. And she did have these sort of smiley laugh lines, not necessarily where you expect them. You know, she sort of teased everybody about the big announcement, because they actually managed to do that quite well. There was suggestion that they were going to make a big announcement, but no one knew what it was. And so when the announcement came on stamp duty, she as I say, she was laughing along, teasing them, and then still teasing them in that clip we showed where she was saying, oh, I looked at this and I looked at that, but, and then the big bang came. So she delivered that well, and it worked. We were trying to remember just outside with Ali Raza, my producer, we were trying to remember what actually Keir Starmer said last week, and we were a bit puzzled what we came up with. Can you remember?
I think it was built to last, wasn't it? That was the phrase, the Britain built to last, and it was in the slogan, Renew Britain. And I think there was something about being fortified, but I may have just had a fever dream, Adam.
No, and there was Farage was a snake oil merchant.
Oh, yes. Well, let's get on to that, because there wasn't that much emphasis on you-know-who in the Kemi Badenoch speech today, but she did deploy a vivid image when she was attacking leaders of other parties. Let's listen to this.
All of them promising more spending, blowing up the public finances. Whether it's Starmer, Farage, Corbyn or Davy, all these men are shaking the same magic money tree. following the same failed playbook. No plan for growth, no honesty about the scale of the challenges, and it always leads to the same result. More government, more taxes, more debt. It is irresponsible, it's cynical, and it's why Britain needs Conservatives back in charge. But we can't beat them simply by attacking them. As George Bernard Shaw said, never wrestle with a pig. You both get dirty, and the pig likes it.
Now, she doesn't associate Mr. Farage directly with that remark, but obviously that is the link that people are making.
Yeah.
Was she right to do it that way?
I think so. I think it was quite clever. I mean, one of the things we saw in this speech was that she was playing the economic card very hard, which, of course, has been difficult for the Conservatives, given given Liz Truss and all the rest of it. She was talking about what they'd achieved in the decade from 2010 to 2020, sort of left out that. And it is true, this is classic conservatism, you know, small state, managing the money, restoring the nation's finances. So I think that's a good card for play. I also think it's a good card for her personally, because sitting in the audience with a bit of a sort of sort of slightly forced grin was Robert Jenrick, and he has gone down the Reform UK stuff very much, you know, immigration and politicising the judiciary and all that kind of stuff. And she was, although those remain government policies or for policies for government from the Conservatives, she was bringing it back to the economic argument, which I think is much easier for her to make and probably one she's much more comfortable with.
Okay, so as they chunter back to London on Avanti West, good luck there, presumably Robert Jenrick will be rather less happy than Ms. Badenoch tonight.
I think so. Well, there's been an argument that Robert Jenrick didn't want to take over now because things were so dire that he wants to make his move when and if the Conservative Party is recovering a bit. But I think given how prominent he's made himself and given that very, demonstrative performance with the judge's wig and the remarks he made about Birmingham not having a white face on the street, I think, you know, he may have done a bit of a Burnham this week in slightly overplaying his hand.
A bit of a pattern there at the party conferences this year. Let's talk about the Prime Minister. Remember him? That's Sir Keir Starmer, who made the speech, the unforgettable speech we couldn't remember at the Labour conference last week. He's out of the country. He's on a trade mission to India. What's this supposed to be doing?
Well, the Indian trade deal is one of his achievements, along with the American trade deal and the one with the EU. Neither of which seem to be doing particularly well, but the Indian one is doing well. So he wants to increase ties and cross-investment between the two. And, of course, what he also wants to do, as all prime ministers do, is to show that he's a figure who counts on the international stage.
Right. And there is big news about a succession of Bollywood films being made here, I gather.
Oh, really? Yeah. This is new to me.
Well, there we go.
Won't be Bollywood, or will they be Bollyborum or something?
There'll be Pine Bolly.
Pine Bolly.
Pine Bollywood, I think. That's
did
what
you,
I
Did
heard.
You know that? Do you know Durdle Door?
Yeah, sort of. Yes,
yeah,
in Dorset.
Which is this whole thing. Which is, if you ever go there now, there are many, many visitors, particularly visitors from the Indian subcontinent. And the reason is that Durdle Door is apparently an absolutely key venue in Bollywood movies for, you know, couples and everyone to go. So it's kind of, it's like Hogwarts for Asian film viewers.
I don't know that. Importantly, the Times, big story this morning in the paper, the NHS having to spend more on medicine. Now, this is to stop the big pharmaceutical companies leaving this country. That's going to be a tough one for the NHS, presumably.
Yeah, it's very complicated, and it is part of the great Trump disruption, because Donald Trump has declared that American pharmaceutical companies have been cutting prices for foreigners, particularly Europeans, and charging more in the free market in America. And he said pharma companies have got to charge the same to Americans as they charge abroad. So what farmers come up with, rather than cut the price to the Americans, guess what, put up the prices to the Europeans. And that, of course, is a problem, because it's been one of the great boasts of the NHS that because it's such a big buyer, it's been able to negotiate drugs at very low levels. So it is accepted that drug prices are going to have to go up. But There is a further complication, which is that pharma companies have been saying, okay, well, if you're going to pay less for your drugs than elsewhere in the world, particularly America, we're going to pull our businesses out as well, and we're going to develop drugs abroad. And, for example, AstraZeneca said it's going to be listed now in New York rather than in London on the stock exchange. So there's pressure there on drug prices. Then there is pressure because NICE, the Clinical Excellence Authority, yeah, licenses drugs if they think they're value for money, and their cap is £30,000 a year for a life-enhancing drug. Now, if they had updated that according to inflation, that would now be £50,000 a year for an individual drug. But guess what? The NHS is short of money. They're clearly going to have to pay more for drugs, and Lord Valance has accepted that. But then there's an argument within government, which is NHS trusts are saying, well, you know, if we're having to do this because of business and because of international politics, we don't want it to come out of our budgets. We want it to come out of elsewhere. And they're suggesting the science and business department. So basically, it's bad news all round. Drugs are going to cost more, and it's going to put more pressure on the NHS. And we can probably thank Donald Trump for that.
Well, that's ended the whole conversation on a very positive note, Adam. I appreciate you coming in. I know it was slightly last minute, so we're very grateful. Adam's going to be back on Times Radio talking to Kate Borsay at about 7:30 this evening.
Now, Sandy is a very happy listener. I heard most of Kemi's speech, and what I heard resonated with me. She hadn't impressed me at all until hearing this. I felt she identified issues that many people feel aggrieved about. Whether they can deliver is another matter, but it's put the Tories back on the radar for me. Right, coming up, we're going to talk tech with our favourite tech journalist, Chris Stokel-Walker. You are listening to Times Radio. We are Jane and Fee. It's 18 minutes past three, and we're with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel.
Stig's back in London. We are reunited, and we'll take stock of where all the parties are post-conference. We're also going to talk about the North Sea. We'll have two sides of the argument for exploration there, and we'll bring you one of the highlights of our week. It is, of course, Andrew Riley with the best letters to the Times.
Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel.
Tomorrow morning from 6 on Times Radio.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So stay sure with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
Hi, I'm Sam, colleague at Asda Hayes. It's hard to find a midweek dinner the whole family can agree on, but a classic cottage pie always hits the spot in my house, especially when it's a great price.
That's right, Sam. And Asda have got this 7.5-kilogram bag of potatoes from £4.10... rolled back to just £3. And this Asda beef and pork mince 750 gram pack for only £4.88.
That's easiest cottage pie. That's good honest value.
That's Asda price. Selected stores subject to availability. Potatoes excludes Northern Ireland. May exclude Asda Express and small stores. See asda.com/small stores.
Can your phone drown out irritating noises in your videos? Can anybody hear me over this? Luckily, Audio Eraser on the Galaxy S25 Ultra gets rid of background noises in seconds. Can your phone do that? Galaxy can. Get 15% off Galaxy S25 Ultra with code S15.
Buy from Samsung.com by the 21st of October 2025. Use code at checkout. Voucher code can't be combined with any other offer. Samsung account login and network connection required. Certain types of noise can be detected. Accuracy not guaranteed.
Listen to Times Radio on your smart speaker. Just say, play Times Radio.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms, helping create rooms to feel proud of. From design consultants who'll measure your space and bring your vision to life on a 3D plan, through to a professional installation service. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Now, here he is.
Everything's computer.
Oh, should we rest him, actually? Should we make that the last time?
Everything's computer.
Oh, Ryan. Let's talk tech news now with our resident tech journalist Chris Stokel-Walker. And Mr. Beast, who is the world's biggest YouTube star, has said that the growth of AI has created a scary time for YouTubers and content creators. Chris, why YouTubers specifically, and should we have sympathy or what?
I think we should have some sympathy for you, because actually, you know, YouTubers do contribute an awful lot to the economy. Sometimes we think that they pollute our children and grandchildren's minds, and certainly there are arguments for that. But actually, you know, there are some things that are good about it in terms of their educational abilities. And yes, particularly YouTubers, I think, are in the firing line here, as Mr. Beast Jimmy Donaldson says, in part because Google, which is a big player in both the AI space and also the owners of YouTube, have, we know, used some of YouTube's content to train their video generating models. And we spoke last week, Fee, about the concerns around Sora, OpenAI's equivalent of this video generating tool, and how it was being used to effectively rip off intellectual property owners. There is, I think, a similar concern here that actually, why would you bother to go and watch actual YouTubers when you can effectively create your own videos and sort of fairy tale style content using your favourite YouTubers anyway?
But what do you think about that, Chris? I mean, wouldn't you always want to head to the real human version? Because otherwise, you're in a kind of pact with the devil if you're just watching AI all the time.
Yeah, the clue, I think, is in the name social media, Fee, isn't it? Which is that there is an element here that is social. Now, many people would argue that we have seen the pollution of social media through political polarization, through a kind of hands-off attitude, and also through finger on the scale by a certain Mr. Elon Musk and also several others as well, where actually the idea of social media being a place where we can have a measured discussion, where we can interact with one another, where actually it can be for good as well as for evil, has kind of gone by the wayside. But I do think that one of the reasons why I think platforms like Sora and also Google's equivalent of AI-generated video won't necessarily succeed. And we spoke also about Meta's Vibes app last week, where it's basically feeds only of AI-generated content rather than any actual humans, is because we would miss that human connection. And for all that we're seeing AI dominating the world, the corollary to that is that actually it reminds us of quite how much we cherish the human connection. It reminds us of what makes us human in the first place.
Sure. And we shouldn't forget that sometimes these amazing launches of products, they don't appear to have been focus group riot by reality, because the product then fails. You know, the metaverse did not succeed. We didn't want to wander around bumping into Nick Clegg and Mark Zuckerberg doing strange things in dark cyber alleyways. So we should all just hang on to our own desires, shouldn't we? And maybe trust them a little bit too. Can we talk about hacking? Two teenagers have been arrested, Chris, in relation to a cyber attack on a London nursery chain. The chain is Kiddo. And also, of course, we've got this huge story with Jaguar Land Rover announcing this week that they will be restarting production following that huge cyber attack. I think what's interesting about this is that targets for hackers seem to be wide and varied these days. But actually, for kids to be at risk here is something new, isn't it?
It is. And one of the things that was interesting is that there was a response within the hacking community to the infiltration of Kiddo's computer systems, where some people thought that was beyond the pale. So there was some honour amongst alleged thieves here. But I think it's a consequence in many ways of just the digitisation of our society. Unfortunately, hackers are relatively unscrupulous in terms of where they target and who they target, and they don't necessarily deliberately pick or avoid picking certain organisations or certain areas. So to them, a target is a target, whether or not they are a nursery or not. And actually, probably once they've gained access is when they first understand really what they are looking at and who they have managed to ensnare in their ransomware. Yeah. So I imagine that actually they were just thinking, well, this happened, and actually we can leverage the fact that these are kids' sure. pictures to say.
I mean, obviously, because it's now a live case, we can't say too much more about that, though, but we will follow the story with interest. We also need to talk about the resurgence of racist comedy sketches that seem to be given new life on social media. This in particular is Bernard Manning. There's a lot of his stuff being circulated around. We won't mention his jokes because they're so offensive, Chris, aren't they? But I suppose what we should try and remember here is not everybody is watching stuff like that to find it funny. They may well be watching it to be horrified by it.
Indeed, they may well be watching that for those purposes. And I think that is one of the things that has been identified here, which is that actually these videos can be a testament to what we see as a particular issue on social media and actually remind us of how far we have come. But it is unfortunate, I think, that these videos with these really horrific jokes that weren't necessarily even appropriate at the time that they were said have continued to exist on TikTok for quite so long. They do actually breach the terms of TikTok itself and the platform, and it actually, you know, they shouldn't have been kept up there. So after the, you know, TikTok was made aware of the fact that these videos still continued to be there and were seen by seen millions of times, they took them down pretty quickly. But it is, I think, just an indication of quite how much these values change and quite how difficult it is for social platforms to actually manage to police what it is that they see on their apps.
Sure. Finally, let's talk big, big money. US GDP growth was driven almost entirely by data centres and technology in the first half of 2025. This is according to economists at Harvard. Without it, GDP growth would have been just 0.1%. Break this down for us a bit, Chris.
Yeah, effectively, we are in the midst of a bubble. And it's not controversial to say that, because even those people within the AI space, including Sam Altman, OpenAI's CEO, have said that he believes it is a bubble too. I think that what is particularly interesting about this is quite how much of a bubble we appear to be in and how reliant our economy, at least in the United States, is becoming on solely AI. That idea that actually you would have seen basically no growth whatsoever if you stripped out AI investment and general IT investment. That's in part, I suppose, because we are seeing, you know, billions, if not trillions of dollars being committed to developing these data centers on the hope that we will have a sort of purpose for AI. The one thing I think that we can take from this really in the UK is we are seeing similar levels of investment proportionate to our economy. The question is whether or not we might go down that same path. And for the government, I suppose the task is to try and ensure that we don't become solely reliant on one sector that is in a pretty precarious position if we don't actually adopt that tech wholesale.
Okay. But if you're looking at the trajectory at the moment, if this does carry on growing and growing, can the planet actually take it?
In terms of the environmental impact, at the minute, yes, we can, provided that we come up with alternative energy solutions, which is why we're seeing, you know, tech companies investing billions into things like small nuclear modular reactors, which haven't necessarily been a fully proven technology at scale. The reason why the tech bros are so keen on this, and the reason why they are relatively bullish that we'll be okay, is because generally what happens is we find efficiencies and ways through. Often throughout our history, when we've come up against a limitation or a barrier, we found a sort of way around it. And they're betting that is the case here. I would also probably bet that is the case, although I'm still a little bit more nervous than perhaps they are.
It's always good to listen to Chris Stoker Walker. If he's nervous, I'm nervous too. Well, I've been nervous for ages, not just because I'm worried about this, although Adam Shaw was talking about it as well, wasn't he, on Monday? And when we talked personal finance, he was discussing that potential stock market crash. I mean, Chris, bubbles burst. And is this going to burst soon?
Yeah, but we there are some people who are really concerned about the fact that we are potentially repeating the early 2000s dot-com bubble. If you look at the Magnificent Seven, which are the big seven tech companies, their proportion of the stock market value in the United States, of the whole market effectively, is at an unprecedented level. And we've seen places like OpenAI making interesting investments into companies that people worry a little bit is the snake eating its own tail here. Now, there is, I suppose, a kind of chasing of this market and hoping that it will result in a pretty big customer base. But if we get even sort of slightly off course, then, yeah, there could well be a little bit of a correction here.
A little bit of a correction, which sounds far less painful than stock market crash, which sounds awful. Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It is a trifle worrying, isn't it?
It's more than a trifle worrying.
Yeah.
It's a trifle with a sponge pudding on top.
Loads of sherry. Right, our big interview today is with no less a person than Joanna Lumley. She's talking about a new book, but loads of other stuff and much else besides. How can I begin to sum it up, Fee? I haven't done it, so
no,
I don't know.
You're just going to have to listen.
Oh, God, I hadn't thought of that. Well, you can join me. Get the biscuit barrel.
Can you not pick it up too much? Oh. It's a very nice interview with Joanna Lumley. Yeah. She's a very interesting person.
Yeah, but?
No buts.
Okay. Grab a hobnob, get the kettle on, and join us for Joanna Lumley in a couple of minutes' time. Times Radio, just after 3:30. Here are the headlines. James Kitchen.
Across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. Kemi Badenoch has pledged a future Conservative government would abolish stamp duty in a bid to get social mobility moving. In her keynote conference speech, the party leader thanked Tory members for standing by after a series of defections to Reform UK. The Shadow Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, Alex Burkhardt, told Times Radio it was one of the most exciting conference speeches he's ever heard.
The proposals that she's put forward are going to make a real difference to people's lives, both in terms of reducing immigration, but most importantly from today's speech, in getting our economy back on track from the absolute disaster that Rachel Reeves has made of it. The sense of excitement in the hall was really palpable. I think it just shows that the Conservatives are back.
Sir Keir Starmer says the government is disappointed the China spy trial in the UK was dropped. He's blaming the previous Tory administration, although the Director of Public Prosecution says the PM's own ministers refused to brand Beijing a threat to national security. James Comey has pleaded not guilty in a federal court in Virginia to charges of making false statements to Congress and obstruction of justice. The former FBI director was indicted last month, days after Donald Trump posted on social media pushing for his attorney general to take action. And Kate McCann's told a court a woman pretending to be her missing daughter turned up in her driveway and called her mum. The Polish national and another woman are on trial. They deny stalking Madeleine's family. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Looking to grow your investments and generate a long-term income? The Scottish American Investment Company, also known as Saints, could help. Saints has been investing for over 150 years and focuses on growing capital as well as income by investing in a diverse range of companies from around the world. Saints is managed by Baillie Gifford, manager for some of the UK's best-known investment trusts. Find out key information and more at BaillieGifford.com. As with any investment, capital is at risk and income is not guaranteed.
Direct Line's flexible business cover means I only pay for the cover I need. That's how it's done. Imagine if that's how everything got done. Like dominating the pub quiz.
Final question. What is the population of Mongolia?
3,537,947.
It's absolutely correct. This week's winner is none of your quizness.
Direct Line. That's how it's done.
Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
You never forget the dogs you've loved. They have the power to steal our hearts, to love us unconditionally, and be there for us when we need them most, without saying a word. You understand how a dog can change a life. A guide dog can transform the life of someone living with sight loss. Will you help change someone else's life with a gift in your will to guide dogs? Request our free will guide today. Search Guide Dogs Free Wills.
Guide Dogs.
Daryl Morris wraps up the weekend's news and takes a look at the week ahead, Saturday and Sunday from 10 p.m.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms. Ready to start your next home project? This autumn at Wickes, there are great kitchen and bathroom offers available. Explore the ranges at wickes.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wickes store.
Now, you can learn a lot about people by looking at where their own curiosity takes them. And in the case of Joanna Lumley, I now know that she loves any kind of list, particularly ones of moths of the British Isles, is drawn to the notions of Buddhism, likes a laugh at the vagaries of our class system, and yearns for the beauty of the dawn. All of these things are contained in pieces written by others, snatches of poetry, and collated clips of wisdom in a new collection of Joanna's favourite writings, which is called My Book of Treasures. The 79-year-old doyen of Purdy, Ab Fab, all the travel shows, most recently Amandaland and Motherland, came in to see us at Times Towers recently. She had already had a very busy morning by the time I saw her. She had just come from the 17th floor, and seeing Virgin Radio's Chris Evans, many people would be a little bit tired by an hour in his company, but not Joanna. Cool and calm as the proverbial.
I didn't get up till 7 o'clock, so that was, no, honestly, very late, very lazy. I live in London, so not very far away.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, there are quite a few passages in your book about the dawn and the love of the dawn.
I love it. Most of my grown-up life I've spent working on films or television shows or even modelling, and they all involve getting up very early. And I got to love, particularly London, because quite a lot of the work I've done has been in London. I got to love London before it had woken up, when sometimes if you were going up through St. John's Wood, you'd see the great cavalry of horses, but they were all, just one man riding, leading one horse, all black, all just wearing sort of mufti and clip-clopping through the streets. You used to see people delivering newspapers. That doesn't seem to happen anymore. Just quiet, quiet, people starting, people sometimes coming back from work. And the grey light, I adored it. Or even the blackness in winter when the lights were on.
Do you know, there's something about your voice, Joanna, where, I mean, honest to God, you could read a shopping list or you could read out sock sizes and we would be mesmerised. When you were a younger woman, did you have the same voice? Because actually, on a very young woman, the depth of your voice, the timbre of your voice must have been remarkable.
Well, I'm 112 now, and I think my voice has come down. I mean, I did make an effort, because I think, I know from recordings, when I was younger, it was higher, and it was a bit further back. And I knew that that probably wouldn't last. And so I thought that it had to be sort of trimmed down a bit. So now, like an old smoker, I'm not this fee.
Yeah, well, tell me about the fags then, love. There is a lovely piece that you've included in the book, and we'll come on to the choices of the book in a moment, but it's an essay that David Hockney wrote in defence of smoking.
He's so funny and so candid. What I love about Hockney is he's rather like his paintings. It's literally that there's no artifice to any of it. It's just blazing and open and funny and humane, really. He's just saying, really, all this panicking about smoking, about the people who die from smoking. He said, what about the people who die from not smoking?
And he makes a very good point that he's had three doctors who've told him not to smoke and they're all dead. You and smoking, though. I mean, I think if we conjure up an image of some of your recent work, you're a fag and out your mouth all the time. Yeah. But is it true that once on set you fainted because you'd had to smoke so much during the takes?
What I had to do was I had to run downstairs on the set. This is in front of an audience, because we recorded all Absolutely Fabulous live in front of an audience. I had to run downstairs swearing about a taxi driver, which I'd be, because he wouldn't have smoking in the cab. And I had four cigarettes in sticking out there. And Jennifer, Adina, lit them. And Patsy was sucking like this, inhaling. So I lit four cigarettes simultaneously. And that was funny and everything. But one of the cameras was in the wrong place. And they said, could you do it again, please, Joanna? So then I had to go back and say, come back. I was crazed with dizziness. I could hardly see. I thought it put me off smoking for a whole day.
Do you still smoke now?
I do, but not a lot, but I do.
Okay. Yeah. Do you worry about that?
No, not remotely. Also, I'm going to be 80 next year, and you can't go on forever. So, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me. And some people have got some people die of stuff when they don't deserve it, and some people die of stuff and they might have hastened their life towards it. We are what we are, just do what you can and love life and be grateful.
I know that you've spoken before about feeling that the push for positive ageing at the moment is, it actually makes you slightly uncomfortable. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Well, I don't feel as though I'm going to be 80, because when I was growing up, 80 was really great-great-great-grandmothers were 80. And it seemed unfathomably old. It's a junior at baby school, we thought a woman who was, I think she's about 32, was just past it and pitiful. So it's very different, you know, whatever age you are. So if you're feeling okay and you're what you are, I think that might be positive aging. What I don't like is this idea that we've got to, all of us, try to live forever. That bores me to death. Anybody who says I'm going to be cryogenically preserved, they're cut straight off my dinner party list.
Okay. Mm. You do mention the early supper parties that you and a couple of girlfriends used to have in a flat in Earl's Court. It's a lovely inclusion in the book about the joy of boiled potatoes with tarragon.
Well, we were so poor. Four of us shared a two-bedroom flat on the top of an Earl's Court building. And we, not the Earl's Court building, a beautiful little building in Earl's Court. And we were all as happy as clams. One was a ballet dancer, one was a secretary, one was worked in an art gallery, and one was a model. That was me. And we had no money at all. I mean, I think I earned £8 a week. Rent was £4 a week. £1 in the kitty for food for the entire week. And £3 was left. Then you had to pay your agent, and then you had to pay tax. So I'd have about 4 and 6 pence. So you didn't have very much money. So what you lived on was nothing. We couldn't afford a fridge, so we put milk on the windowsills. We couldn't afford a cooker, so we rented one from the gas board. I mean, but we were as happy as larks. We did everything ourselves. And quite often supper was boiled potatoes.
Do you think that you would enjoy being that age now? No. As a modern young woman?
I'd be terrified.
Why?
Well, because none of this self-regard. I think that mobile phones and social media have encouraged people to look inwards and look at themselves all the time, reflect always on themselves. And that's the only certain way I know of becoming incredibly depressed. It's the worst kind of legacy for depression there is. And people are now astonished at what they call the mental health problem amongst young. It's because they're being encouraged to look at themselves and only themselves, regard themselves. That can't work, Fee. That's not the way forward. Forget about yourself. Look forward. Look outwards.
Is there a bit of you, as an older woman in the industry, that envies younger women being able to air their grievances about men? Because I know that, you know, you were not immune from hassle from older men when you were a younger model and actress.
You had a tougher skin then. You knew, you used to pass around messages, you know, that thing of not safe in taxis. And you'd know somebody, you'd go, don't be alone with him because his hands will be everywhere and things like that. But it was never a great drama, you know. I think men are men are men. You know, they've got different appetites. It's going to make me terribly unpopular to say this, but I do think men and women are kind of different, tend to be.
When you say different appetites, what do you mean?
Literally different appetites. I think that you can keep a camera crew, if they're men, happy by giving them some very good food. And so, for instance, in the French film industry, they would have a sit-down lunch every day, and the entire crew would sit down for a three-course lunch with bread and wine on the table and a starter and a main course and a delicious pudding, because that kept them happy and kept them going. Now, I think women can get by on a cup of coffee. I really do, because we're used to it. So I just think we have different paces.
Okay, so you don't mean sexual appetites?
I don't know. Who am I to say what anybody's sexual appetite is?
Do you feel a pressure on you to keep working, or are you genuinely interested to keep accepting the jobs?
The jobs tend to, for instance, I'm working now long into next year, because both they're series, which means I'm connected, I'm attached to them, contracted to them, so that I'm in them, I'm faux de mieux, or whatever the word might be. I'm going to be in them anyway, and I'm lucky and thrilled to be in them, but that's not choosing to be in them, that is because you are in them.
Okay.
And I'm interested in everything anyway, so I don't know what I would do if I just sat at home not doing stuff I love.
Tell us about these selections in the book? Because they're so wide and varied.
Oh, well, look, Fia, I've been collecting things since I was about 12, you know, just save things up and stick them in the back of a book, but I use them as a bookmarker, cut it out. And then as I got older and had to do travel shows and things, I'd scribble things down, always carried a notebook with me and still do to this day. But I'd see things in newspapers that I thought were fascinating. And I kept them. About 2-3 years ago, I did a book, a compilation book about the Queen, what people thought about the Queen, what they'd written about her, from very grand people to very humble people, through the ages, through her long, long reign. And the same publishers, Hodder and Stoughton, said, would you like to do another book? And might you have another think about something? And I said, well, look, I've been collecting all this stuff for so long. Might that be useful? They said, have a go at it. So I printed every piece out separately, all the pieces I wanted. And then, of course, I was searching through. I thought, I know there's something I've written down somewhere, furrowing through, finding all these things. Print them all out separately and then assemble them into a kind of book form. And I wanted to sort of start and end with Dawn because it seems to be an exciting time. But in it, there are bits that are funny, bits that are quite prayerful, quite somber, bits that are dug out from history. Some of it sounds quite grand, you know, the Essay on Man by Alexander Pope. But it's not grand if you read it. It's fascinating and good. Some of it, a tiny two-line poem by Spike Milligan or a quote from Stephen Fry. But then just funny bits and then just poems, because I love them.
And there are some lovely bits and pieces you've collected on the way throughout your career. I really enjoyed the stage directions, the
enchanting.
So there's one here on page 34, George Bernard Shaw from Passion, Poison and Petrification. I don't know whether you
could read
that.
He says, a thunderbolt enters the room. This is a stage direction. A thunderbolt enters the room and strikes the helmet of the devoted constable when it is attracted to the waistcoat of the doctor by the lancet in his pocket. Finally, it leaps with fearful force on the landlord, who, being of a gross and spongy nature, absorbs the electric fluid at the cost of his life.
It's just brilliant.
I mean, even to do that on a film, but on stage, how would you ever do that?
You've also introduced, I think, the reader to many, many wonderful things. And I think we're quite familiar with Nikki Haslam's list of things that are common.
Yeah.
But I hadn't come across the other list from Michael Bywater.
Who was one of my... Yeah. And he's just died recently, which is awful, and I'm so sad about that. I really admired him. He's a desperately funny man, and he's got a great insight, and he made a common list, and he said, for instance, it would be common not holding doors open for women, making a fuss about religion, referring to bodily functions, drawing attention to things, drawing attention to oneself, inability to hold one's drink, and it goes on down and down and down. It goes groping, burping, pushing in, whining, showing off, living beyond one's means. I love that. That's the thought of being rather common. Gobbling, shrieking, too much perfume, Brule cream.
But also going to the toilet.
Going to the toilet. I know. It's sulking, retching, flouncing. But it's just so funny. It's just the way we look at each other, Fee, in life and judge each other on what we do or don't do. And Nikki Haslam is just hysterical. I mean, he seems to revile everybody in the world, and I just know that all too soon we'll be on the list as well.
Oh, well.
Because he names people, doesn't he?
Yes.
He says people who just are things he finds common, and people he finds common.
I don't think you'd ever be on the list, Joanna Lumley. I don't think you would. We don't have you for that much time,
yeah.
And that's absolutely our loss, but I'm sure it's your gain. You can go on to the rest of your day. But I did want to ask you about your campaign for the Gurkhas. It was so hugely important. To grant status in this country to people who had served this country.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, in the current climate around immigration, where you think that could have been a successful campaign now, or have times really changed?
You know, it's so odd, isn't it? Because already that was unfair back in 2008, 2009. because Nepal, which is where the Gurkhas come from, has never been part of the Commonwealth. It had, but the Nepalese soldiers, i.e. the Gurkhas, have always been part of the British Army for 200 years. They didn't have the same treatment as the Commonwealth soldiers did. And it was just literally unfair. I don't know whether we would... It was a battle to get it through, but we did finally... A Gurkha justice campaign. We got justice for the Gurkhas. But I wonder if that would be right now. I have such a... I'm an immigrant. I was born in India. I've got my British papers signed at home to show that I belong. So I'm very wary of all this judging people. I think it's detestable. Our energy in the world should be, again, looking out. We should see why people have to leave faraway countries and prefer to come here. It's usually because of climate change has made their lands untenable, or strife and conflict and hatred and division has made their country unlivable in. And so why don't we all in this world try to make these colossal areas of the world safe to live in again, pleasant to live in? Why don't we have reverse osmosis and use desalination plants to water the desert so plants can grow, so trees can grow, so places can turn back to the forests they once were? Why don't we try to do that rather than setting up boundaries and walls to block people out? Mm. We're not thinking straight.
Are you one of those people who has felt at the moment that they actually need to dip out of the news because news is so grim, or do you stay involved?
Well, I'm a bit hooked on it because I'm so terrified, because it seems to be happening very, very fast. In the old days, maybe you'd get some story of interest. I don't mean that, but you know what I mean, of major interest once every 3 weeks. Now it can happen twice a day. And because of the volatility of the decisions of the President of the United States and the menace that comes from Russia and the difficulties in the Middle East, in Gaza and Israel. And then the eye swivels right away from places like Darfur and Yemen and all the regions which are... I mean, Darfur is in the most catastrophic state, but because nobody can get there, nobody knows how many million people are dying of starvation there and the slaughter that's going on there. And these are horrifying things, and you get drawn into it. Sometimes you have to just take your head smoothly away.
And so much of what's in the book is about exactly that, isn't it? Mm. It's little things that have caught your eye, yeah, along the way that can take our mind to a different place.
And can restore your faith in humanity, can teach you a little bit about how to live, because no matter how old you are, you still have to learn about how to live. Nelson Mandela saying, revenge is like taking poison yourself and hoping it'll kill your enemy. You know, things like that. There are just things in there which makes you... just stop and think for a second. And some of it's just ravishing beauty. Dylan Thomas. You know, I'm addicted to poetry. That is one of my addictions. I always have poetry books beside my bed. I've got a whole bookcase at home which is only poetry. And I love poets and mourn people like Brown Patton, who's just left us. And I just think it's a delicious... I think I'm going for this word, smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord. That's what we want this to be.
You said it so much better. Well, Joanna Lumley does. She does, she does, she does. So, Joanna Lumley, My Book of Treasures, is out now. It's a little hardback, so it's not too, too pricey, and she's nailed it as a Christmas present because it's also small enough to put in a stocking.
Oh, well, we don't have stockings.
Do you not? Do you have pillowcases?
No, just sacks.
Sacks.
I'm such a generous sacks. Individual. Like that.
Well, lots of you have loved hearing from her. Jan says, I've always loved Joanna and I now adore her even more, from an older female smoker. This one comes in from Debs. Inspiring to hear from Joanna Lumley. I wholeheartedly agree with her attitude to life. I've been unleashed at 68. Oh my God, Debs.
Wow.
And found reserves I didn't know I had to get out and live before I shuffle off my mortal coil. Life is too precious to faff about. And Charles says, Joanna Lumley talks nonsense about immigration, as the bulk is not due to climate change. And she's hardly an immigrant, as her parents were English. Do you know what, Charles? The point that she was trying to make is just in people's differing attitudes towards who's an immigrant and who's not, often based on ethnicity, on colour of skin. And I think the point that, and genuinely in the interview, I did think about it when she said that, should I challenge that statement? But I genuinely think she was trying to say, I was born in a different place, but I've been able to just come to this country and be welcomed. You know, her whole fight for the Gurkhas was because they had been part of British society abroad. They had fought for us.
They died.
They had died for us. us. And, you know, they had every right, you know, as the army officers in the British Army did, and that's her background, that's Joanna Lumley's background, to just get on a plane and come back to this country. So I'm pretty sure that that's what she was meaning, Charles. So please don't feel that you need to take offence at that.
It was also good to get a reference to Nicky Haslam and his lists of things that are common.
Well, his lists, and because I hadn't come across the Michael Bywater list as well, which I think is just equally devilish and always just quite fun to read.
Robert says, I love Joanna Lumley. She's so right about the sheer narcissism induced in the younger generation via their obsession with themselves on mobile phone platforms. As for the timbre of her voice, if only she could be an alternative to the voice on Alexa, then men of a certain age would be adopting that option in their droves.
I don't think I'd ever leave the house.
let's not think too much about that, actually. We should say that Joanna Lumley's book, My Book of Treasures, is available now. Tomorrow's guest, and we've had a really excellent week of
guests. We've had a superb couple of weeks of guests, actually. If you think Lise Doucette, Elizabeth Day, Joanna Lumley, and tomorrow,
Anne Cleves. And now she is beloved by many of us for her creations, Vera, most notable, of course. But she has written a new Shetland novel, which I think will delight her many, many fans of Jimmy Perez, her Shetland detective character. This new book is actually set on Orkney, and it is called The Killing Stones. So Anne Cleves is our guest tomorrow.
Now, Charles says, no offence taken, and the treatment of the Gurkhas has been very poor. Excellent. I'm glad that nobody has been left upset.
No, nobody wants to be upset. By the way, you can message us about anything. We honestly, it's water off a couple of old ducks' backs. It really is. 0333 003 2353. It is, we find ourselves at 3:30 to 4.
The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay on Times Radio with the new Volkswagen California camper van. Embark on an evening expedition, rounding up the latest news and previewing tomorrow's headlines. Plus, don't miss Hit the Road, your essential weekly travel guide to the best destinations across the UK and beyond. The Evening Edition, tonight from 7 on Times Radio with the new Volkswagen California camper van. Designed for every adventure. Search New Volkswagen California to find out more.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
Nobody asks to have a lifetime of memories slowly erased. Nobody asks to have a loved one not recognize them. Nobody asks to feel lonely and confused. But today, you could change this. By leaving a gift in your will to Alzheimer's Society, you'll help fund life-changing support, vital campaigning, and groundbreaking research to tackle Britain's biggest killer. Discover the impact your gift can make. Search Alzheimer's Society Wills.
Calling all little wildlife explorers. Playmobil is now in Happy Meal. Look, is that a seal? And a sea turtle? They've been around for millions of years, just like me. Which will your little ones discover? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 14th of October, from 11 a.m, Playmobil comprised toys only, subject to availability.
When you're growing a small business, you need someone who understands the ins and outs. And whether you're a tailor or an accountant, you need the tools to succeed. With an HSBC Small Business Banking account, you'll have free accounting tools and access to our business specialists, virtually or in person. Because whatever your small business looks like, we're with you all the way. Search HSBC Small Business Banking account to get started. Subject to application, eligibility, credit check and T's and C's. Visit hsbc.co.uk for details.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Yep, Jane and Fee on Times Radio. With Wix, book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk. Now, actually, I forgot to mention earlier, and I should have done, that Anne Cleves did create Vera. Vera was famously played by Brenda Blethyn. Brenda Blethyn and Anne Cleves were our guests last year at the Cheltenham Literature Festival.
I can see where you're going, you old duck.
Yes. And next week, we're back at the Cheltenham Literature Festival. Are we not?
We certainly are. We're going to be presenting the show live from one of the enormous stages. And we are delighted to say that our guest will be Penny Lancaster. So last on the list is the fact she's married to Rod Stewart. And at the top of the list comes campaigner for the menopause mandate. Also, she is a special constable. She is a huge supporter of charities that empower women. There is plenty to talk about. with her, and maybe little Rod will be there in the front row, but we'll just pass him by.
Stick him on the back row. Patrick says, I'm Irish. I regard myself as an immigrant. I'm constantly told I'm not one because, in quotes, you're one of us. I find this insulting, as it ignores the fact that actually I come from another place, which is sovereign. Who is and isn't an immigrant can often be in the eye of the beholder. Well, ain't that the truth, Patrick? And he apologises for his name and says, Patrick, rather unoriginally. It's a great name.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you, Fee. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar. Here's Times Radio Drive and the headlines. The Prime Minister insists previous Conservative government policy on China is to blame for the collapse of a spy trial. And the former FBI Director James Comey pleads not guilty to lying to Congress 5 years ago. Coming up, did Kemi Badenoch's conference speech do much to change the political reality facing the Conservatives? And indirect talks between Israel and Hamas are taking place in Egypt to end the war in Gaza. And what really happened with that collapsed Chinese espionage case?
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with James Kitchen.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. Kemi Badenoch has announced a future Conservative government would abolish stamp duty, branding it a bad tax that's killing social mobility. She also promised to ban doctors from striking, tighten rules on motability cars and use half of all savings from cuts to reduce the deficit. She told her party conference in Manchester a Tory government would back farmers, small businesses and victims of crime. The Shadow Environment Secretary, Victoria Atkins, was asked if it'll be enough to blunt Reform UK's success.
I think they'll be worried about us after this. My goodness me, you know, who doesn't hate stamp duty? Suddenly we've opened up the future of home ownership to young people. We've opened it up to families who want to grow their families. We've opened up to grandparents.
Labour's called the speech a desperate mix of gimmicks. The former Conservative leader, Sir Ian Duncan Smith, has accused the Prime Minister of not telling the truth over the Chinese spy trial. Sir Keir Starmer's insisted the previous Tory government policy on China needs to be the focus of scrutiny after the sudden collapse of the trial. It comes after the UK's chief prosecutor suggested the current administration was to blame because it wouldn't label Beijing a national security threat. Sir Ian, who launched the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China, told Times Radio the policy at the time, Christopher Berry and Christopher Cash, were arrested, was clear that China posed a threat.
This ridiculous dance that's been carried out over the last few days, tortuous and deceptive, has been a horrible sight. What they didn't do was prosecute those two people. Why? Because the Chinese government has bullied them like mad and said, you do not prosecute these people, and we want that super embassy. Get on with it. Otherwise, you get no trade relations. And what a pathetic, weak set of people this looks like now.
Sir Keir Starmer has promised to crack down on pro-Palestine chants following a wave of protests on the second anniversary of the October 7th Hamas attacks. The Prime Minister said he would review current public order powers. He also called for a conversation with forces about how the protests are policed and vowed to work with Jewish community leaders to make them feel safe. But speaking to Times Radio, the free speech campaigner and crossbench peer Baroness Fox described the approach as wrong-headed.
When you hear the slogans on these demonstrations, you might well shudder, and I certainly do. But I think the question is, why have so many young people in particular adopted this stance? And surely what the government should be doing is giving moral leadership in, if you want, launching a battle of ideas for the hearts and souls of the young of this country so that anti-Semitism isn't quite so casually displayed on our streets, not banning it, which is bad for everyone.
The former FBI director, James Comey, pleaded not guilty to lying to Congress 5 years ago. The charges relate to statements he made when questioned about his handling of the investigations into Hillary Clinton's emails and election interference by Russia. Mr. Comey, who President Trump once called one of the worst human beings, has asked for a jury trial. And Madeleine McCann's mother has told the court how a woman claiming to be her child turned up at her house demanding a DNA test. Jurors have previously heard that Julia Wondelt also showed up at the McCann family home with a letter addressed to them as Madeleine. The 24-year-old Polish national is accused of sending messages to Kate McCann, which didn't get a response. Another woman, Karen Sprague, is also accused of stalking. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on the Times radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB,
online, and on your smart speaker.
John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive with Barclays Corporate Banking.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. It's almost started to feel like the next election campaign started early, very early, even if the Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch's torrent of policy pledges today, lower taxes with the abolition of stamp duty for home buyers, top of the list, even if it came late for a lot of Tories who felt stuck in the blocks at the start of the race while Nigel Farage was already halfway round the first bend. I'm not saying Farage and Reform UK are round the bend, by the way. That's just the implication of Kemi Badenoch's pitch to be leader of a party with credible, thought-through plans and not just a lot of crowd-pleasing slogans. And say what you like now about the Conservatives under Badenoch. And I really want you to do that. Send me a text on 87222, start with the word Times, and tell me what you think. The promise of a smaller state, a relentless squeeze on public spending, and a rolling programme of tax cuts is nothing if not a stark contrast to Labour, as the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, struggles to keep public services funded at a level people want while agonising about which taxes to raise to pay for it. And Reform? Well, the Tories' great hope seems to be that Nigel Farage's party will implode as the mood of protest against high migration numbers, against politics as we've known it, gives way to hard scrutiny of the rival party's rival promises. So will Reform implode? Will Badenoch last long enough in her job to find out one way or the other? And do these Conservative plans make sense and add up? I'm going to be talking later to the Shadow Chancellor, Mel Stride, and in a moment to our political editor on Times Radio, Anna Mikhailova. Tell me what you're thinking. Send me a text, send me a tweet to @TimesRadio. And of course, we are also watching the Gaza peace talks in Egypt closely. There is optimistic talk that they might just deliver an end to that awful conflict. There's lots of quiet worry that a peace deal is not done until it's signed, and often not even then. More on that coming up on the programme. Firstly, final day of the Conservative Party conference, the leader of the party, Kemi Badenoch, speaking there.
Thank you for standing by the only party that can meet the test of our generation. The only party that can deliver a stronger economy and stronger borders. Everything else relies on getting this right. National security, order on the streets, decent healthcare, high quality education, cohesion in our communities. None of this exists without a strong economy and strong borders. A weak economy and weak borders means steady decline. I reject that fate.
Kemi Badenoch announced a new policy meant to help home ownership.
So I have looked at the stamp duty thresholds to see where we can change them. I have looked at the rates you have to pay to see if we can lower them. I have decided that we can't. Because that simply wouldn't be enough. Conference, the next Conservative government will abolish stamp duty on your home.
There was this on young people's options after school.
Every year, thousands of young people go off to university, but leave with crippling debt and no real prospects. Nearly one in three graduates see no economic return. And every year, taxpayers write off over £7 billion in unpaid student loans. Wasted money, wasted talent. That's every year. A rigged system propping up low-quality courses while people can't get high-quality apprenticeships that lead to real jobs. So we will shut down rip-off courses and use the money to double the apprenticeship budget.
The Tory leader took aim at Reform.
But we can't beat them simply by attacking them. As George Bernard Shaw said, never wrestle with a pig. You both get dirty and the pig likes it.
So Kemi Badenoch's big speech at the end of the